During the meeting, special meeting, roll call, let the record show that all directors are present over Zoom. And second item, agenda approval. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Steve, can I add something right now if the directors approve it?
No, one of the things about it being a special meeting is that you can't add anything onto the agenda but special meeting. You'll notice that an amended agenda was sent out more than 24 hours in advance, and that is allowable. But
what about a regular meeting?
You can, if the board determines by a 4/5 vote that there's a need for action and that the need arose after the agenda was posted.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
I was half right, Wes.
Okay, all right. So, can I have a motion to approve the agenda, please?
So moved. I'll second the motion.
All those in favor of the agenda, say aye.
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 All opposed? All right, the agenda is approved. And first item, we have a public comment section. If somebody wants to raise their hand, I would probably, okay, we've got a couple people here. We go with Pam first.
Can you hear me now?
Yep. Yeah, sure. Okay.
I timed it. It should be under your 5-minute deadline. I chose to be a resident of Wrightwood because I recognize and love the beauty of the area and cherish the culture and quality of life that everyone here has helped to create. I deeply value parks. I am excited to hear we have an opportunity to expand and have more, especially on the east side. I served on the city council in Rancho Cucamonga when we had 0 parks. I helped to get 16 new parks built from scratch. I did my homework while on the council when we built new streets, roads, and highways. I am familiar with the technicalities of building the infrastructure of a community, including parks and roads. I clearly recognize and fear that lots of details are missing in considering the feasibility of investing precious $2 of the park of the per capita grant fund for building a road to a donated piece of property in order to build a park. The questions I suggested were missing from the consideration at the last meeting were just the beginning of the missing issues to consider before undertaking such a big project. It was clear that we do not know what we do not know, and we do have an obligation to find out before we commit to the investment of these rare and precious new dollars that will be available for our use. Yes, I want a new park, but as a taxpayer and as someone who deeply loves and values this community that has been created here, I can't help but be concerned about several basic issues I beg you to consider. In reading the application for SB68 grant funds, I am even more concerned. On page 8 of your application, right here, I have a copy of it. On page 8 of that, it talks about match. Discussion was held before that we wouldn't have to pay the 20% matching funds. However, if you read that application on number 8, it says we would be required to do a 20% match of the cost of the project because we are not a severely disadvantaged community. Mm-hmm. And there's detail for that, and we don't qualify. On page 14 of that grant application, it says that the lands must be open to the public for recreational purposes within 3 years of the final date of the grant. On page 8, number 2, it says that we must certify that we will have available, prior to the commencement of the project, work using per capita funding sufficient. We shall have the sufficient funds to complete the project, and the project must be open within 3 years of that. How are we going to pay for that, the completion of the project? We can't just have a road. We have to have it operating. And on page 8, number 3, it says that we certify that we have sufficient funds to operate and maintain the project for the duration of the contract. The maintenance is the issue, along with being ready to open for the use of the facility. And the contract is for expires in 2048, so we must have funds to be able or means to maintain it until 2048. None of that has been considered. I also am deeply concerned about the traffic. Do we have to do a traffic study? Does that road go in off of State Highway 2? Is that going to be safe? Is Caltrans going to let us put in a road there? Will we have to put in a light in order to have a road there? Who's going to pay for the light? We will have to pay for the light. Is there going to be a stop sign there in order to provide for safe ingress and egress of that area? Also, I'm concerned deeply about the drainage. Once we cut into that land, it's built on a deep slope. Where is that drainage going to go? Once you cut into it, it has to go somewhere. Are they going to make us pay for a culvert to go under State Highway 2? Have we even considered that? I hope there are some answers later to tell us that all of these things have been considered and it's still feasible. And will we have to do an EIR? Do we have the money to pay for an EIR? And how long will an EIR take to have done? Will we be able to afford to get the park developed in order for today's residents, even 10 years into the future, to use it for any purpose? Would we be better served to use the funds to upgrade and take care of some of the major other needs we have with the current less than ideal facilities we have inherited from the county? I hope you already have information that confirms a positive answer for each of these issues. I support a park on the east side of Brightwood if these issues are positively addressed. I deeply hope that there are feasible ways to get these things done. I trust that you will make a wise and careful decision on behalf of us all. Thank you.
Thanks, Pam. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Pam.
Okay, right with Randy.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, sure can.
Okay, Pam did a pretty good job of expressing some of the concerns. All I wanted to say is WWPOA has been around since 1947. And the mission of that POA is to protect, promote, and enhance right with property values and lifestyle culture. The lifestyle is why people want to come and live here, and the demand for our lifestyle is what drives property values. And, of course, fundamental to a great life school involves great parks and rec, of which we've done a really good start. And you would also say, for instance, that Wrightwood itself is a big park. So we at the POA love parks. We just want to see parks done right. And actually, when we saw at the last meeting that the board was ready to vote on the east side, we had concerns, some of which you just heard from Cam. I guess the only real question, we see in the packet that there's nothing under Agenda 12. Were we going to discuss anything more, or what do you recommend?
Well, we just take public comments at this part right here.
Okay. Well, anyhow, we're all for a park if it's done right. Just the red flags and stuff that we're seeing says, well, perhaps, we need a different kind of grant or something. But anyhow, we can talk about it later. So thank you. Appreciate everything you guys do.
Thanks, Randy.
Thanks, Randy.
One second, Bruce. There you go, Bruce.
This is all new for me. My name is Bruce, and residents of the town here. Looked over some of the stuff that was being presented. Background for you and me is 35 years as a land developer and a builder. Before that, 12 years as a city planner, so I've had both sides of the coin, as you'd call it, about the land. Looking at the proposal, and there's things that kind of stuck out that didn't make any sense to me. There's a question of whether or not there's actually a living agreement in writing to which piece of land that we're referring to as the donated piece of property. The technical things that I'm looking at is that according to the general plan, 132 acres that's owned by the property owner is all one piece. So it's that's to me that they're going to have to do what they call a minor subdivision to carve out that piece of property. One of the things I noticed on one of the proposals was that there's a road that everybody's talking about, and I'm curious as to whether or not that road is a part of the 4 acres that is being presented as going to be gift to the CSD. That brings up the second question, which is there was two different pieces of a paper that showed one with the yellow circle around it, which was right down next to the Highway 2, and then there's the second one, which showed the more detailed project up there with the plot plan, and that was 500 feet away. And I'm curious as to why they didn't go with the property closest to the Highway 2, because to me it would make more sense to save about $100,000 in road costs. Also, I wanted to find out why this was the only option that was available after 132 acres. Isn't there another piece of property that would be more convenient, say on Wrightwood Mountain Road? It would seem to me that we wouldn't have to put any of those costs there, and more of the monies could go towards the pre-production costs, which would be your engineering, architecture, and soils reports, compaction reports, and all the other things that go along with it. Those are just my observations and comments. I thank you all for listening, and that was it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
Okay, any more public comments? Don't see. Again, thank you. Item four, we've got agency reports. I don't know if there's any agencies here. Don't anybody see anything like that? I don't see any.
No, I don't see anybody out there.
Yeah. Okay, no agency. Consent calendar. Chuck, did you take a look at the minutes?
Yeah, they looked okay.
It looked okay. All right, can I have a motion to accept the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor of the consent calendar, say aye.
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 All those opposed? All right, consent calendar carries. And item six, general manager report.
Okay, we completed the audit of the financial statements for year end June 30th, 2020, and the results will be discussed under item 8 on the agenda. The painting of the community building, restrooms, and maintenance building has been completed, and everything looks great. If you've not seen them yet, please drive by. The election results are in, and Measure W passed by a wide margin. We are preparing for the upcoming snow season. The porta potties have been ordered and will be here this Thursday, and we have some tree trimming scheduled for Saturday the 14th. We received a notice from the Department of Alcohol Beverage Control that Wrightwood Brewing Company has applied to expand their license and will have a jukebox for entertainment. If the board wishes, we can object to the expansion, but I don't see it as an issue. In addition, I was just recently...
That's the only thing that they're expanding? I'm sorry, is that included in the background, sir?
I would say they're not really expanding square footage for what I saw.
But the actual thing that they are applying for, is that in here?
No, it is not.
So is that for their restaurant up there, or is that for when they do a festival, is that for a parking lot?
That's for their restaurant up at the top.
Okay.
I really think we should, somebody should actually look that thing over.
Okay, I will send it to, who do you want me to send it to?
You can send it to me, Leo.
Okay. I said the last one that we had on this, you guys didn't only wanted to be notified, so that's why I didn't include it.
Well, I mean, if it's something that they're doing and we have some say, I mean, we should, I mean, it's probably, we have nothing to say, right? But, I'd like to see the details.
No problem. I'll send it over to Leah tomorrow. I've also been approached by Livestream. They want to use the community building for blood donations. They want to do it about once a month. I need to get more information before I can present it to the board.
Okay. All right. That's it?
That's it?
Okay. Okay. Anybody have any comments or public comments on that?
The building looks great.
Yeah, it does. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yes. And Weston, thank you for putting the wording together for that ballot measure.
Steve, can you pull that measure W thing just one more time for the public record so that people understand what that is?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, congratulations on Measure W passing. That's good news for the district and for the constituents. Set forth in the argument in favor to Director LoPiccolo and President Zuber drafted, not a tax. What it actually is it sets the limit on what the appropriations that the district can make from your tax rolls. Every year the board will be asked to amend that permanent appropriations limit. If you recall when MAFCO approved the formation of the district, it set forth a temporary appropriations limit. You've been adjusting that every year as part of your budget. And under the LAFCO rule, you were required to hold an election on the permanent appropriations limit and your first general district election, which was on the 3rd. And so it passed by a wide margin. That amount is now your permanent appropriations limit. You will also be adjusting that on an annual basis. So we'll need to go to the board every year as part of the budget materials and the adjustments that take place based upon population and based upon COLA will still need to be brought back to the board for approval every year.
Right.
So.
Okay, very good.
Congratulations on that.
It is difficult language, you know, it's a weird sort of system, so people can even be confused by it. We're very happy it passed, of course.
Yes.
All right, so thank you very much, Steve. Item 7, October 2020 financials. Jeff, we turn to you.
Thank you. A couple questions, Holly. The water bill, Lori, we talked about that before, but it's still, you know, this month was $4.93, and it's the same time to me. Where if you look at on the financials under 52404, we're almost close to what we budgeted for the year. Not that we can't amend the budget and that type of thing, but I know we had talked before about there was a leak or there was something with sprinkler, and we haven't been able to do it, I guess, because of the weather or whatever, but we're spending, you know, for not having the thing rented, and just you and Tammy in the building and sometimes John, we're spending a lot of money on that aspect of it. Do we have any kind of time period as far as we're going to be able to address whatever the leak is there?
Yeah, actually, the leak is going to be addressed as soon as I get some more cash in the account. I was told last month by the board not to spend anything that I didn't need to, so that went on the back burner, and we just turned the sprinklers off within the last 2 weeks, so the next bill should be considerably less.
Okay.
What's it going to cost to get back in there, Lord?
I don't know, because we're not sure exactly what the issue is. We're going to have to dig up the pipes, and we may have to replace all of those. or and we're going to have to put new sprinkler heads on.
Okay.
Lori, did you, did the water company come out and take, like, a look at it from the beginning?
Yes, they did. They did a leak check, and they found no leak.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, the other thing would be the balance of the checking account here at the end of October for the 4,000.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, you're turning away from your mic, Chuck, and we can't hear you.
Oh, okay. It says 4,907 is what it shows in the checking account right now.
No, that is not right now. That is as of October 31st.
Okay, it's the end of October.
Yeah.
Where are we today?
We are, technically we're considerably more than that right at the moment. I had to transfer money out of the savings account because we have bills to do that I could not put off any longer. So I had to transfer $20,000 to take care of those bills and to cover next payroll.
Okay. So we still have, will that cover the next bills until some other revenue comes in?
No, that only covered the bills that we have outstanding at that point in time.
Are you anticipating having to transfer more out of the savings account?
At this point, I am hopeful that we do not have to transfer any more of the savings account because most of the other bills that we would get in right about now, we can hold for another 30 days.
So okay.
We should start to get some revenue here towards the end of the month.
Yeah, hopefully. And I would like us in the future to talk about the regulations regarding the savings account. Because I know the reserve accounts need board approval. I don't believe that the savings account needs board approval, but I do think it needs a second check on it, like we do with our regular checks. We need to use signatures. So that's for the next meeting. Let's see. The second thing on the 13th, do we have
Hey, you're ready to move, Chuck.
Sorry, guys. The tree trimming that you have scheduled for the 14th, do we have a bid on that?
Yeah, he's going to be trimming three trees, and they're $90 a piece.
Okay. And that's all I have on the financials.
Laura, which trees are they? They're in the north side of the parking lot?
Two of them are in the Vivian Mill parking lot. One is at the very edge of the Veterans Park.
Okay.
We've trimmed almost all the other ones that needed to be trimmed. We did that ourselves, but there is a few that we just can't reach.
Got it. Thank you.
Oh, one last thing. You had mentioned to me that the CR&R, as far as the expense and the revenue that we get from them, because they weren't doing the recycle, then we didn't get as much money from CR&R when they stopped doing the pickup of the recycle and just did it within one truck.
No. It's the solid waste fee that we pay CR&R, and because they weren't doing any recycling, the solid waste fee went up because everything was going through solid waste.
Right.
Now, okay. I will say, Chuck, that we have a really good deal with CR&R. And yeah, this COVID stuff happened and they couldn't do the recycling, but they're back on it now. It's my opinion, if you're thinking about asking them for some additional money, I don't think that would be right.
No, I was just asking that it came up and I didn't know anything about it, that's all.
Yeah, no, so instead of the recycling, because they do a heck of a thing for us, by them doing the recycling, that doesn't go into the landfill. It's just that during the COVID thing, it ended up going in the landfill, so the CSD has to pay for that additional weight to go into the landfill, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I understand that. I would just prefer that we know that stuff when it happens, you know, because they went,
we did have
5 months without doing the recycle.
We've been over it, and we did, and CRNR has notified everybody. I mean, you should have got, you know, everybody knew about it. It has been going on for a while, and even at some of the meetings we put, you know, it was up to me to talk to, talk to them.
Brent.
All that. You're gone.
And Brent even just, explained it to the board a couple months ago as well.
Right. Okay. Is that okay?
Has to be.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Any other questions or anything on,
No. Not for me.
Okay.
No.
Okay. All right. No public comments. Now remember, I see one person on the phone here. If you're on the phone, if you want to raise your hand and make a public comment, you do a *6 and we'll raise the hand here and I'll let you in on the public comment. Okay. Let's see. Item 9, Christmas tree donation.
No, you skipped over 8.
Sorry?
You skipped over 8.
I did?
Yes.
Over 8. Oh, the fiscal year end June 30, 2020. Yes. Who wants to speak to this?
I was going to say, we have both Brandon Farrell and Hong Nguyen from ED and Paint.
Yeah, okay. All right, we unmute you, Hong and Brandon.
Good evening, everyone. I'm very happy to be here. I am the partner of engagement. That's, you know, like all teams, Brendan actually is the Bobby's team member that did most of their work. So I'm going to have Brendan present to you the financial statement, and we're available for any questions after the presentation.
Can you hear me?
You can.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, let me just make sure my headphones work when I'm starting to get out of here. Like Hong alluded to, my name is Brandon Farrell. I'm the senior manager on the audit. And I will be presenting the audit reports to you guys tonight. Have you guys, there's two portions, I think, that I downloaded offline. There's the audit part 1 and audit part 2. We'll start, if you guys wanted to follow along, we're going to start with our audit part 1.
Okay.
So I'll give you a second digit there if you guys want. So if we're scrolling down, we can work through page 3 of your of the PDF, like page 1 of, you'll see at the bottom of the page there, it's called Independent Auditor's Report. This report just kind of goes over our responsibility for during the audit, management's responsibility during the audit. Ultimately, the most important part of this report is our opinion on the financial statement. It is our opinion this year that the financial statements are fairly stated within the applicable accounting principles accepted in the United States. So again, another good year for the district in that respect. The one other thing I want to draw attention to on this report is underneath the opinion section on page 2, there's this emphasis of matter paragraph. This is just drawing attention to a restatement of the 2019 financial statement. And just to talk about that a little bit, the franchise fee revenue from CRNR previously was classified under the sewer fund. Upon further review, we determined that it should be classified under the general governmental activities, as it's more of a license to do business.
So it didn't change the amount or anything like that. It didn't that income to the proper category for that income.
Yeah, it's specifically taking it from your business type activity into the governmental activity. So no, your bottom line hasn't changed, it's just a classification issue.
Have we changed the classifications now for future? Are you aware?
Yeah. Oh,
Yeah, that's good. On an ongoing basis, that's going to be in the proper category, yeah.
Yes, correct. Okay. From 2020 on, so again, we reset it 2019. 2020 is in the same manner, and then it was going forward, it'll be classified in the same manner.
Okay.
All right, so that is the audit report. If you guys want to go to page 6 of the PDF, but page 4, you'll see on the bottom of the page there. This is a statement of deposition. Here, this report, or this statement presents assets, liabilities, and ultimately the net position. You'll see that your two different classifications, your governmental activities and your business type activities, and then you'll see a total column. Just for reference, the 2019 information is on the next page. So you'll see the same page as statement for 2019 on the next page. So just to go down, total assets this year is approximately $875,000. Compared to $845,000 last year. So you've seen an uptick of approximately $30,000 in total assets. Again, you'll see that mainly has to do with an increase in cash and capital assets. Total liabilities this year is approximately $52,000 compared to approximately $106,000 last year, $54,000 decrease. The main reduction here is you guys paying off your long-term debt. I think it was you guys paid off the skate park, and then the election costs that are classified as long-term debt continue to be paid down.
Yeah.
Ultimately, we come to a net position, a combined net position of approximately $824,000. That's up about $85,000 from last year. Does anyone have any questions on their statement of net position?
No.
All right. If we fast forward here to the statement of activities, that's on page 8 of the PDF and page 6 at the bottom there. Here, this statement details out the expenses and revenues for the year. Again, the next page, you will also find the 2019 if you want to compare it to the 2020. So just going down here, and I'll talk about in total here, is total expense this year is approximately $380,000. That's down about $12,000 from last year. So fairly consistent between year and year. If we move down to program revenues, and this includes your special assessments for your business type activities and then your rental and recreational charges on the governmental side. So in total, we're approximately about $248,000 compared to $263,000 last year, so a decrease of about $15,000. The decrease is mainly in the recreational and rental revenue, which is expected due to our current circumstances. So moving on down, we're getting down into the general revenue. We see what I talked about before, the franchise fees, and then also the property taxes. This is all part of the governmental activity. This range is approximately $217,000 this year. So it's about a decrease of $5,000 from last year. So fairly consistent. Ultimately, the total changes in net position here is $85,000. Again, that's compared to $94,000 last year. So a decrease overall of $8,000. Any questions or any specific questions on the classifications or anything that you would like me to go over?
Could you clarify what the depreciation expense is?
Yes, the depreciation expense is related to your capital asset. So you capitalize the cost of the asset, and then the management determines the useful life, and then each year, you know, if it's a 7-year life, divide the total amount by 7, and each year you get a seventh of, you know, of that amount in there. So ultimately, if you had no further capital additions ever, ultimately, at some point, that number would be zero on the balance sheet.
Okay.
Does that make sense, Michelle? Because I think the depreciation is something that's kind of hard to understand at first. The basic concept is you can't write the whole thing off. You can only write off a piece of it at a time. Just the way the tax code works. That's just the way the code works. So if you buy it for $1,000, the IRS will say, look, you can only write $200 a year off on that. You can't write off the lease obviously for that year.
Okay. Okay,
thank you. Brandon, I got one going back to page two, the bottom of page two, where it requires supplementary information. We have admitted the management discussions and analysis that the accounting principles generally accepted.
Yeah,
must be presented. We didn't put it in, but I know it doesn't affect the thing, but...
Yeah, so ultimately part of our government agency's financial statements are, you know, what's typically required is a section that if management, again, it's their kind of discussion and wording and explaining the activities throughout the year, explaining to you guys from their point of view. Management has chosen to admit that, and I don't think it's not like a misleading thing or anything. It's just either pretty simple, simplistic financial statements, so... I don't think management felt the need to go with the MD&A.
Okay.
We can always hire. That's really up to management's discretion. And I know, I think this is the first full year for Lori.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you decide to put it in the future, you can do that. But we'll leave it up to management.
What does that statement look like,
It's like a variety of summarized financial information and some paragraphs of summaries of the financial information with a section for a paragraph explanation. Kind of what Brandon just went through, but that's on paper.
Yeah, it includes the more qualitative information saying, okay, this even simply just why revenue went up specifically and stuff like that, where it gives you a little bit more information as far as the details of why things actually happened.
Like the the pandemic, add that in there as well.
Yeah, so that would be a part of it, saying, you know, rental revenue and recreational charges drop because of the shutdown and things of that nature.
Yeah, because when 10 years from now, if you want to look at what happened in 2020 and 2019, then you got some insight because obviously new board members will want to look at that as well.
I think 2020 is pretty well branded.
And just to let you know, there is a note disclosure in the back that does address COVID and just saying that, what a mess it has. It's very brief, but there's some kind of narrative in there saying that, okay, COVID is...
Thanks, Brandon.
No problem.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No.
Okay. So the next thing we'll move on to is page 10. Page 10 of the PDF and then page 8 on the paper. These are the balance sheets of the governmental funds. As again, we have your two classifications. You have governmental and the business type. This is a governmental. I'm not going to go in detail over this. I'll just explain the difference between the statement of net position I previously discussed. What the difference here is the governmental is on a modified accrual. So what this doesn't include on the balance sheet here would be your capital assets and your long-term debt. So on the next page, you will see a reconciliation of how we get from this statement to your governmental wide statement of net position. So again, you'll see on the next page, you'll see the addition of capital assets and the amount of the reduction of notes payable, and that's how you get from this statement over to your government wide statement of net position. Hopefully, did I give you too much on that? Did you have any questions?
Yes, you did.
County government and throwing the government stuff on top of the regular accounting stuff makes it confusing.
Yeah.
Basically, what it comes down to is these payments are more on a budgetary basis, closer to cash, without depreciation and things to muddle it up a little bit. So when you set a budget on an annual basis, the government will financial more closely than that role.
Yes, this is what you're more looking, when you guys are looking at like monthly financials, this is more of what you're looking at rather than the government-wide ones which we previously discussed.
Yeah, I know we went over this at the year-end last year and you guys did your presentation, and unfortunately, I'm still as confused as ever between the government and the
other. Don't feel bad about it.
Well, as long as your conclusions are that it's being run conservatively, that it looks good, that we're not, even due to COVID, you know, even though we had this COVID shutdown, that we're in reasonably good shape, I think paying off the skate park, all those things, that's kind of what we're looking for. You know, are we doing everything in a fiscally conservative way?
Which indicates that you are. So, this is the balance sheet of the government funds, and then again, we talk about the reconciliation there.
Yeah.
Just to move on, if we move on to page 12 of the PDF and 10 on paper, this again, like the government balance sheet, this is the governmental statement of revenue expenses and changes in fund balance. Again, the difference here is you'll see expenses for capital outlay, which means these are your capital asset additions in the current year. So this, on the governmental side, they're recognized as expense rather than put on the balance sheet. And then also you'll see here your debt service, which is your payments for the long-term debt. Again, they're addressed as an expense on the governmental fund side rather than the balance sheet or the government side.
It's just so weird. But
No. And Wes, coming from a private industry background as I have, and I got here, I go, this is weird stuff as well.
Okay.
I sympathize with all of you in that respect.
But this is required by the state. We have to do it this way. And it's got to be done right. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. And so again, the next page you'll see the reconciliation of how we get from this statement to the government-wide statement activity. So you'll see the add backs and subtractions there and on how we get there.
Okay.
So the next page, we go to page 14 of the PDF and 12 on paper. This is the other classification. This is the proprietary fund, meaning the sewer and waste. This is exactly as presented on the government-wide statement activity. Since it's a proprietary enterprise fund, it's more like a business, regular business, so there's really no difference in here from where how it's presented on the statement of net position.
Okay.
And then the next page is the statement of revenue expenses. Again, this is the same as you saw it on the government-wide statement of activity.
Okay.
So unless someone wants me to go over something specific, I don't see a need for that, as it is the same.
There's nothing surprising in here at all.
No. Yeah, I'm drawing anything that I feel like I need to draw attention to. You guys are getting it. So the next page, if we move to page 16, this is the statement of cash flows, and this is only as it pertains to the sewer and waste fund. This kind of just goes over where your cash is coming from and where your cash is going. Just to briefly go over it, you have net cash provided by operating activities. So you have cash coming in from operating activities of $22,000. You have cash flow going out from financing activities, and this is just your payment, your principal payments on your long-term debt. Ultimately, a net increase in cash this year of approximately $16,000. So, any questions on the statement of cash flows?
Yeah, Brendan, what is our long-term debt now that we've retired the skateboard park? Is it just simply the election cost?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so you get approximately about $32,000 left on that.
And that's not counting this year's election.
No, that's not any cost that we're in here this year. It's not awful. But this election is not.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like that's a $10,000 a year payment to San Diego County.
That is correct.
Not for this year, from the previous year, right?
That is correct. Previous year.
Yeah.
Well, then we got three left, or?
Right, we're halfway through.
Okay.
Yeah, we're halfway through. And this, in this election, it shouldn't be anywhere near this amount, because it's shared, remember, it's shared from everybody that counts.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
When will we find out what this election costs?
When they send us a bill.
Good, Michelle.
Just like we found out the first one.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
Phone call. You know, it's a phone call. Okay. All right.
Okay. So as far as the part one of the audit, the packet, we're done with that. And I will, if you move on to the second audit packet, I can briefly go over that. We'll go over a couple of the letters, and then my work here will be done. So hopefully everyone's at the second audit packet. These are on page one. This is the beginning. So page one of the PDF, 15 of on paper. This is the beginning of the notes of the financial statement. The notes of the financial statement are detailed and explanations and further detail on specific items that are the basic financial statements that we already discussed. They discuss accounting policies and further, again, disclosures on other items. They're very detailed and pretty painstaking to read. If you want to bore yourself, you can read them all. Unless there's any specific questions you guys have or any notes you want me to address, I'll fast forward to just the one that I really wanted to highlight. The one I just really want to draw attention to would be on page, let's find this, 27 on paper, and it's going to be page 13 of the PDF. Here is where we discuss the prior period adjustment and restatement of the 2019 financial statement. So this kind of just details down, gives you an explanation of what happened and what we did to rectify that reclassification. If you guys have any questions on this, please let me know. And on anything, guys, if you guys read this at a later date and you have any questions, please feel free to give Kong and I a call. We'll answer any questions you may have at any time.
Okay.
So again, that's just discussing the reclassification here in note 7 and note 8. And then here I'll just highlight here in note 9 in subsequent events. This is where we kind of just talked briefly about COVID, saying that it's negatively affected some operations, but as a whole, you know, it hasn't affected you guys materially.
Okay.
All right. The next page is required supplementary information. This is just, again, comparing your budget to actual. So your original budget, your final budget, your actual, and then the last column will show you your variance. So in total, and in the net change, from budget to actual, it was off probably $61,000 approximately.
Okay.
I wanted to add that this is only on the general fund. I know when you look on a monthly basis, it's for the whole it overall, but this is just for the general activities for Parks and Street lighting.
Okay.
That is also one of the biggest between the financial statements that are presented here and just what you discussed, October financials, for example, is that we can make that distinction between the two activities and that revenues and expenses for each of the activities are segregated so that you can see the buildup of funds for each respective activity.
Okay.
Any questions on the notes? Anything here you want me to discuss before I move on to the letters?
Anything that you would recommend as far as when we get into doing next year's budget that we should be aware of?
Like I said, the budget, I think maybe especially since you're tackling bigger projects right now with the grant and things like that, make sure you allocate your expenditures according to activities if you can, because the solid waste fees are really to mainly operate the solid waste activities and to keep that going. And, you know, whereas you have disposable revenues available to general revenues, which are the property taxes and the entities that are really just for general operations, you know, the function that you are discussing on a day-to-day basis more. So consider that. I think the software has those capabilities. Lori actually keeps track of them by class, and that's how we're able to distinguish the two. But also, just as you're building a reserve for each, there is a distinction whether you're building a reserve for your business type activities, which are your solid waste versus your general activities.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Hong.
Thank you.
Anything else, Brandon?
Yeah, we'll just move on here. This was discussed, I'll mention this briefly, is on page 16 of the PDF, you'll see the beginning of a letter here. Part of auditing standards, we require to have communication with those charged with governance, which is the board, and this is just communication. What this does is it's kind of like an overview of what went on or any kind of significant dealings within the audit. That we discussed here. So we draw attention to certain disclosures, and again, like I discussed here, we draw attention to the prior period adjustment and restatement here. We talk about corrected and uncorrected misstatements. Again, there were no uncorrected misstatements, but there were several misstatements that we worked with Lori to correct. There were no disagreements with management. No significant difficulties they encountered. Overall, this was a good audit. One of my more enjoyable audits. Thank you. So that's what that letter is detailing. Lori, I'm not sure you put this in here twice. I thought you may have been trying to put the internal control letter in there. So I will briefly, you guys can't see it, but I'll briefly discuss the internal control letter. Part of our audit requirements is that we look at your guys' internal controls and bring light to any deficiencies we may find. This year, in doing our audit procedures, there were two what we call audit findings, and they are kind of repeats from last year. One would be proper classification of the expenses. In some instances, and looking at the accounting records, some of the classification between the sewer and waste and the general activities were off, so we worked with Lori to correct those. And then also, as a repeat from last year as well, is the financial preparation. And what we're talking about more of that is we're assisting in the preparation, so that's not it. What we're referring to is making sure when it gets to us, the proper accruals are made, meaning your accounts receivable, your accounts payable, prepaid, and any accrued liability. So we'll work with Lori this year to make sure that we tackle that in the proper way. And when it comes to the next year, that is, we hopefully won't have to adjust any of that.
Okay.
But ultimately, again, I think Lori's made good progress in getting the records cleaned up from previous years. So I want to thank her for accomplishing that, and we will continue to work with her to make it even better.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Lori.
And Brandon, I've got one more thing left. I want to recap this real quick. Brandon, this CSD started in July 1st. In 2017, with $11,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we received from the county. And this board was very conservative by the leadership that was on this board. And having the reserves that we have and where we're at today with all the expenses with doing the painting, upgrading things around, I think this board did a remarkable job for the last 3.5 years.
It's funny that you actually say that, because in reviewing the financial statements to make this presentation, I did come across and I go, yeah, they did start with nothing on this a couple of years ago, and I was looking at your at your reserve, they, you know, you're unrestricted net position. I go, yeah, you know what, they've done a good job. So, again, congratulations to the board and, again, management. I think you guys taking the proper steps to make Brightwood, you know, a better place, and you're doing it very persuasive as possible.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brandon.
Okay. Any public comments on this issue?
Is that your office behind you there, Brandon?
I put this background up when they closed down the bar, and it's like, it's 5:30 somewhere, right?
Thank you for your effort.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. Very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Want to hear about all the rest of our great agenda?
Have to make dinner.
You guys.
All right, bye, guys. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, item 9, Christmas tree donation.
Yeah, that would be me, Wes. This is the Christmas, or the community Christmas tree that's lit up on Highway 2. I think I'll pass this off till next month, since we might have a little bit more money to seek for a donation for the Christmas tree that was put up with the help with the Wrightwood Village Foundation. And so I think we'll just push this off until next month.
Neil, it looks absolutely fantastic.
Very beautiful. It really does.
It does. I know part of the trunk is not lit up or something, though.
Yeah, I was there last night, plugged it in, and then two nights ago I had to replug it in. We've got some kids there unplugging it.
Okay.
So thank you, guys. And it's a lot of work on my right side. Most of the work on her side. But I just wanted to make sure that we set aside some time next Monday, next month, Lori, on what we could do, or if anything, for the community Christmas tree foundation.
No problem. I got it set to roll over to December.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank them all for their work. I think all of anyone who's listening is involved in it. It looks just spectacular.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Okay, item 10, Brown Act. That would be you, Steve. Oh, is he gone? No?
Excuse me, you
did. How did that happen? I don't know how that happened. Maybe you got disconnected. Okay, you here?
There he is. Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I want to apologize for not attending the board meeting last month. To present on this. I had a friend of mine's son died unexpectedly. I gave Wes a call, and he graciously allowed me to skip the meeting, so I apologize to the board and thank the board and Wes in particular for granting me that accommodation. What this item is I think I sent an email to the board. The minutes reflected that Lori reported on the email. As the board knows, a quorum of the board cannot discuss district business outside of a notice of an agendized board meeting. What this bill did, and it will become effective next year, is that it dealt with social media posts. And that is, and so what it did was apply the standard that exists now to social media posts as well. So three board members cannot discuss amongst themselves issues of district business on any type of social media platform. Which means you're going to discuss district business on social media. You got to go through the chain and see if any other board member has talked about it. If you're the third one in, then you would be prohibited from joining the conversation. That's not a big surprise. Kind of the bigger surprise is part of the new law that prohibits a director from directly having contact or responding to another director's post on social media. And that is now prohibited, even if it's, even if there isn't a third one in. So, so you are prohibited from directly commenting on another director's social media post. So that's a lot. I'd be glad to answer any questions that the board may have.
That seems simple enough.
Pretty straightforward.
Don't have social media.
Yes.
No way, Michelle is muted.
She okay. She might have shut that up for a second.
I think so.
I did mute myself for a moment, but then when I tried to unmute it, said you had to unmute. Steve, we discussed last meeting that it's not so much an issue because very few of us are on social media, but I just want to clarify, just of my own curiosity, if I was on social media and say Wes was on social media and he posted something about his kid having nothing to do with CSD business, can we then communicate?
It can't be about district business.
District business. Okay, so it's consistent with the non-social media rules and everything. It's always when it comes to district business.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any public comments? Oh, wait just a minute here. Just a second. Pretty straightforward. Okay, well, no public comments. Thank you, Steve, for that.
Thank you.
Item 11, CSD contractors policy and criteria, discussion of possible action. And this came about from a letter that was sent to the district about a contractor and some work we had done. And I think it pointed out that we just don't have a good policy for this, and we need one because we've got prevailing wage, and we've got all these issues, and we need to make sure that we have a straightforward policy. And so, Steve, I think you've had some work that you've done with other districts along these same lines, right?
Right. What is also in the agenda materials is the district standard agreement for services. This is the agreement that we've used for professional services. In other words, services performed by not non-construction contract services. So anything, for instance, your auditor, me, anything that isn't construction-related, we've used this agreement for services, and that's sort of been the standard guideline for that. Your park and rec administrator was under this agreement as well. And this just lays out all of the obligations as an independent contract. When it comes to construction contracts, then there is a different set of documents that are required. And I have prepared purchasing policies that I can bring to the board for other districts and specifically community services districts that require for contracts $25,000 or more competitive bidding. And then the board would be in position to also set policy for contracts that wouldn't be construction supplies or construction work. But what are sort of the purchasing requirements for those types of contracts. So the law has already outlined the way in which the district has to advertise bids and has to go through the competitive bid process, develop bid specs, develop requirements, publish it, post it, and then award to the apparent low bidder.
Do we already have that?
I prepared a memorandum to the board this summer, and you may recall that we kind of went through it, but as a policy, we haven't adopted a policy on that. But that would be, as it relates to those types of projects, we would just be incorporating what the state law is under the public contract code for community services districts. And the limit there is $25,000 contract.
Right. I remember that, but the contract that you put in here almost looks like it's now contract.
Yeah.
You know, it's consultants, not contractors, anything like that. So it kind of confused me on that aspect.
Yeah, this contract, I just wanted the board to be aware we do have an agreement in place, a standard contract that Lori can use whenever the district is retaining someone to perform services as an independent contractor that is not construction-related.
Okay.
To be construction-related, it's a whole different set of documents. The legislature has really regulated the field on what needs to be in construction contracts. So it's important to have that line between independent contractor work and construction contracts.
What differentiates independent contractor from construction?
Well, that's it. We need a policy that gives Lori a guideline when considering contractors and even going to the bidding process. For example, need a current contractor's license, right? That is good, upstanding license from the state of California that we can look up on the website and see it on there. They shouldn't be able to use their dad's, contractor's permit. They should have their own. That is the entity that is bidding. You know, secondly, we need certified payroll for anything that's $25,000 or over. We need certified payroll so that because we're on the hook if that contractor doesn't pay his wage. We're on the hook. Right? So yes,
you are on the hook.
Right.
And it's important to look at these in the context of what is the work that is being provided.
Yeah.
So if it's a construction project,
yeah,
you're building something, you're improving something, you're doing anything like that where it's construction related,
yeah,
that requires competitive bidding, that requires, if it's over $25,000, it requires prevailing wage, it requires all the stuff that Wes is talking about. If it's not construction related, for instance, that wasn't a construction contract, your park and rec administrator, maybe your auditor, anything that isn't construction related, but you're hiring an independent contractor, a third party to come in and do work for the district, then the agreement for services that's included in the agenda material would be the document that would create that contractual relationship.
What about when we're doing the work on the grant? And we have to have construction guys and their construction work. And so it is related to the grant. Is that separate?
No.
It's not separate. In fact, you're going to get the double whammy on that. So what you're going to get is you're going to have to comply with state law as it relates to what you need to do in competitively bidding for the construction work. And you're going to have to comply with the contract conditions that are going to be part of the grant. It's not free money. It is absolutely, and we have to get that out of our mind, that it's free money, that someone's just writing a check. You will have some serious contract conditions that you will need to comply with. That will include CEQA. It will include the competitive bidding requirement. It'll include a lot of different things that the district would need to be prepared to comply with, in addition to what you already have to comply with the state law.
Yeah.
What about regular activities like plowing snow or putting up lights, any of that stuff?
It's under $25,000.
Oh, yeah. One, it's under $25,000, and two, it's not construction. You're not building anything.
Okay.
So that would not require competitive bidding.
So Lori, I would still get some type of a liability policy on snow removal.
Okay.
And what your policy would have on that the policy that Wes is talking about would be, okay, so what do we do in the event of those types of contracts? You know, what's the process? If they're 5,000, if they're within the general manager's signing authority, then general manager can do that. If it's from the signing authority to, say, 5,000, you don't have to competitively bid, but what's the board going to want there? You know, three quotes and that kind of thing. I think, you know, so that way it would lay out from a price standpoint.
Yeah.
But staff needs to do in order to bring that to the board.
Right.
So you would need to comply with state law as it relates to construction contracts and what the requirements there are. And then anything in this additionally that the board wants to, that the board would need from staff for contracts that aren't construction.
Yeah.
That's what a policy would do. And I could put together a draft of that based upon what I've done for other community services districts. So it wouldn't be at much cost to the district. And I can bring that as a model document.
Certainly. Now that would help
for the board to look at your next meeting.
You're hired. Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds really good, Steve. Could you do that?
Sure.
That's perfect.
Okay.
We need to get Lori as a policy that she can follow to qualify or disqualify contractors and when to do it, when to apply and all that. Yeah. Okay. All right. Any public comments on that? Don't see any. Okay, item 12, per capita grant standing committee, discussion and possible action.
Hi.
You're on.
I'm on. Yeah. All right, so I had hoped that I could report more this month, but basically after what I had reported last month to you guys, I couldn't really get any additional information from the county on, like, the questions that Pam brought up, all the specifics. You know, she had a lot of good questions there. So what the county had me do was submit what's called a pre-application development review. So I basically had to submit a letter of intent and a drawing that I showed you last month to the county. It was free, and they basically just take a look at it, review it, and tell us everything that would be needed to accomplish that project. And so basically everything that I showed you guys last month, I took to them, I submitted that application. They told me that it should take about 3 weeks to process. They meet every Wednesday to discuss plans, and I heard back from them yesterday, and they said that they will not be able to give the review until November 25th. So as far as the questions that Pam brought up, most of those I don't have answers to yet because the county is going to give the answers to me for those. So that is kind of the update on the county. In the meantime, I did some calls to other dog parks to see what dog park, you know, what it took to operate them and whatnot. And I also met with two contractors for the who had given the road bids originally. So just starting with, do you like me to start with the road bids or the operation of the dog park?
Well, Natalie, I'd like to go with what Bruce had asked, where one of the drawings in your thing was right next to Highway 2, and then the other drawing was, it almost looked like it was of that property.
Yeah. So that drawing I tried to like scale it down and scale it back up because the entire parcel is like 132 acres of property. So the one with the yellow circle around it is like a scaled back version of where the property is, just to give like a general idea of what we're talking about, how it's next to the Sheep Creek Wash. And the actual drawing that has the road on it and all that, that is where, like, the pink portion of it is
right.
What we're talking about, what was submitted in the pre-application plan.
So the pink portion is the actual 4 acres.
No. So the 4 acres goes all the way back to this yellow portion. It's everything within these red lines here.
Does it include the road? Does it include the road, the 4 acres?
I believe it does. For the way I understand it, it does. And so what the pink part is what we're talking about as what I call phase one to start the project with, which we're just talking about starting with the dog park because we don't have enough money to develop the entire 4 acres. So this up here is probably would have about a half acre dog park with a parking lot, a road going to the parking lot. So that's what I proposed in the pre-application review is building the road, in the parking lot, and having a half-acre dog park.
Yeah, Michelle, you got your hand up. She's muted again, Leah.
She's muted.
All right,
I'll be again. Perfect,
thank you. So I just wanted to pipe in with the fact that it's not just the dog park, it's also the adult exercise equipment and a trail that would be developed for
to
use that equipment. Yeah, that's what we're hoping to do.
And we can do all of this for $91,000?
No, so I had 2 contractors come out and meet me in person, and we walked the whole area. We climbed the little hill and walked up to where the 475 feet off the highway is. And so I got a quote back. So we got one quote for $99,000, and that would be for grading, like a fine grade, and doing the asphalt and doing the parking lot, but it would not include rough grading. And so that's going to make a difference for us on the price because rough grading is basically like going through and plowing out all of the initial dirt and the rocks and the trees and things like that. And so we got another quote, and that one included the rough grading, and that one was $135,000.
Does that include the architectural plans for the entire park that we're going to need?
No, that's just the road.
Okay, so we would still need the architectural plan.
Yeah, we would have to do a survey. And we would have to, you know, stake off the 4 acres of land that they're going to donate and, you know, determine where it actually is. And then we would have to hire somebody to do drawings of the road and the actual area.
Do we know yet the people that are donating the property and what they want for the donation?
They want the road. They want us to put in the road. And so it will be to Bruce's question, I don't know why it's that particular 4 acres, but that was the 4 acres that was offered. They didn't offer anything off of Rice Mountain on the other side or anything in any other area of that 132 acres. It's only that portion.
So they don't want to donate the property unless they get a road. That's the trade-off.
Unless we create access to it, because it's 475 feet off of the highway too. And so back to the $99,000 quote, if we did that, I've been able to get a commitment from some community members to help with the rough grading with their equipment so that we could have that as like a donation. But again, we have so many unanswered questions from the county that there's so much work to be done.
It's a long process. I'm going to have your comment from Pat Wright. He says, you know, the contract specifier cannot be based from the grant, see page 17 of the grant application. So I don't know where to go to the point of that comment.
Okay.
But clearly, there's a lot of work to do. And it might be premature. I mean, these are all really good questions. You just have to keep working through to see where we end up.
And what the county says. And to have questions about, the environmental reports and, the soils reports and things like that. What I was told by the county is after they look this over, they're going to be able to tell us every type of report that we need, every type of permit that we need. And the what I was told originally is that because this entire parcel is part of a development that's going to happen in the future, and there's a chance that we may be able to piggyback off of some of the work that's been done by that development. So I think that would be like some of the, some of the environmentals and the reports and things like that. So that's what they're looking over right now and they're reviewing, and I should have some answers by November 25th
And they'll give us answers as far as whether we need water to the area?
Yeah, and that's the big one that I'm waiting for, because that's going to make or break it. If we have to put water there, we won't be able to afford it, and so we just kill the idea. Now, I called a couple of other dog parks that I thought were comparable to ours, and specifically Hellendale CSC built a dog park, I think they said about 3 years ago, and Spring Valley Lake has a dog park both similar in size of what we're proposing or what we're talking about, a half acre. And so Hellendale specifically said that they didn't really deal much with the county because they weren't constructing like a building. So we're not proposing building a building. We're just proposing like flattening an area and putting a fence around it. So we may, be helped in that aspect. And I asked about the staff time and, what it took to, maintain it. And they both described it as very low maintenance. They said their staff spends 1 to 2 hours there a week, and they both have grass. So basically that time is spent mowing grass. So they didn't think that we would spend that much time there. And occasionally, checking the trash, making sure the trash isn't overflowing and whatnot. So that's just a brief answer to some of the questions that came up last night as far as, what our employees would have to do up there.
Are their employees, are Hellendale's employees full-time employees, or are they part-time employees? Or do we know?
I think they have full-time. They have a pretty big staff.
They're our employees.
They're all
full-time except for the thrift. They're all full-time except for the thrift store.
Yeah. So, so she just described, occasionally checking in, making sure that there weren't, like, dog bags on the ground or, people leaving, dog poop and things like that. And but they said it was not very much work on their end, and Spring Valley Lake does the same thing.
And we're looking at a half an acre out of the four that are donated, and part of the four is the road and parking lot?
Yeah. The land is for, the total land donation would be 4 acres.
Okay.
So right off the bat, I would through my research this last month that we would definitely have to get a survey done sooner rather than later, and we would have to hire somebody to do some drawings, an engineer to draw up the road and draw up the area.
Okay. Well, there's still plenty of work to do, so you just need to keep motoring through it.
Yeah, and so I guess I was, coming into this sort of with a recommendation, basically and ask the board if the board was comfortable giving more time to this idea, or if the board was not comfortable with that. I think Michelle and Lori were doing some more work on the other proposal that we presented last month, so just in case this idea doesn't move forward. But I wanted to bring it to the board and ask if the board is comfortable taking more time, because I understand that, we're on a timeline with this. So I'm asking if the board's comfortable with putting more time into the road idea.
I think we need to continue to vet the idea a little bit, and Lori and I have worked on gathering information about, basic total overhaul to Hollister Park, and we're still awaiting some estimates. Lori, correct me if I'm wrong here, but we're still awaiting some information back from companies on that, and so I would say, I don't think that, I think we can wait and make a decision on this at least next month, as opposed to tonight, because I'd like to hear at least what the county says. I think this is good information. Should this ever, whether we decide to do this with this grant money or not, and I see there's a lot of potential barriers in the way, but this idea has been brought up so many times, but I'd like to see it a little more fleshed out while we have the facilities to do so or have the resources to do so, and see what comes back from the county, you know, at the end of this month. And then Lori and I can complete that information about what, you know, a new Hollister apartment might look like and all the different components with that, and then come back and hash it out, possibly for certain in December or based on what information we have then.
Well, keeping in mind, based upon the survey, what, 60-some% of the community is looking for something like that.
No, that's not true, Leo. 60% of the polling that they took of 300 people, I believe we got close to 5,000 in the community. So when you say 60% of the community or the town,
you're right. But those are the people that came aboard and was very, very supportive about it as well.
Yes, that's true. There were 300 people that were very supportive of it out of 5,000 or 6,000 people.
So I think it's 60% of our respondents, and that is one of the pieces, absolutely, Leo, that makes me say we need to continue to explore this. We're not committing to anything right now. We have to continue to gather information.
I don't think that's a good argument to always say, and they use that. I've heard people use that same argument that the majority of people did not vote for the CSC and all that stuff. You know, that's a false argument. You can never get 100% of people in town to vote on CSC. That's not the way it works. It's a representative sample. Chuck, let me finish. That's not the way it works. It's a representative sample. If, in fact, 60% of the people responded, then that's what it is. It's 60%. You can't say, well, not enough people in town have to comment about it. If you want to say, get more people, then why don't you go out and get more people? Yeah, it's the way it works. I think Michelle and Natalie are right.
Well, thank you guys for listening to me on that. And I was going to ask, Pam, you presented very good questions, and I was going to ask if you could email those questions to me, because I have like an online portal where I can keep submitting questions that come up, and so I'd like to add some of those to my questions, if possible. Thank you.
All right, thank you a lot. Thanks, Pam.
And just also, since we don't comment during public comment, just like to thank both Bruce and, Brandy, for their comments and the points that they raised. All of these are great things to explore.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, thanks very much. Okay.
Thank you.
Item 13, snow removal ad hoc committee. Leo, I've let us down on this. I need to talk to you about this.
We can talk afterwards, but did you see that note from Hank Hallmark?
No.
Okay, I'll find that and I'll forward it over to you.
Okay.
Because that might be a decision maker right there.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Okay, see, it's item 14, CSC Board of Elections, discussion of possible action. Who put this on there, or what are we doing?
somebody told me to put it on here, and I cannot remember who it is, so.
Okay. Well, that's Steve. We have a next meeting, I think, is what, December 1st?
December 1st.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, that's right.
December 1st? Yeah, okay. When they certify it, I guess, at December 1st. Do we have to have a special meeting, or do we wait until January to have our next meeting with whoever wins the election?
Well,
Well, the term of office expires noon on December 4th. So your next board meeting will continue all of the existing board. And then new board members or old board members serving new terms will be eligible to be sworn in to office, take the oath of office noon on December 4th.
So is that something we would set up a special meeting on December 1st to do, or
this how does that meeting work? On December 1st. By December 1st, you already have an irregular meeting.
Correct. But for the December 4th, we don't have anything scheduled.
Well, December 4th is just the oath of office. That does not have to occur during the board meeting. That can take place offline. Sometimes boards like to have that as part of the ceremony and, choose who will administer the oath and that kind of thing. But there isn't anything that legally requires it to occur at a board meeting.
Okay, if there's no board meeting, who gives the oath on the board?
And does it need to be in person?
So the in person is an interesting issue that is still kind of being deliberated right now as to whether remote oaths of office are going to be allowable. As far as the administration, again, does not require the board to administer the oath. Only anyone that is legally authorized to administer the oath. So I think, county officials can do it. I believe it can be administered by the board president. So it can be done offline. Lori, as general manager, would have the ability to administer. So it can be done that way. It requires... It requires the filling out of the paperwork and all of that. And you guys are all familiar with the oath of office and filling out that paperwork and keeping it on file with the district. So we could talk about that again on December 1st. I don't know that there's necessarily any action for the board to take on that, but the election results certified. And then I guess on the first we can agendize it and see if there's anything that the board needs to do.
Okay.
But as far as the first goes, your next regular meeting will be with even if the results are certified, the next meeting will be with the existing board because the terms of office do not begin until noon on Friday, December 4th.
So at a minimum, it sounds like on Friday, December 4th, we would need whichever members or whoever wins these different seats to come and see Lori to take the oath, or how much time do we have, or is there time gap?
Well, the only gap is that until the oath is administered, then you're not authorized to take any action on behalf of the board. If you're having any, there's a committee meeting, or something like that, if any actions that are being taken by directors who have not yet been administered the oath and their term is run, then they would not be authorized to do that.
Okay.
So that's how that would play out.
Okay.
So December 1st. Well, I would say we need this on the next agenda, right? Because there's this question of when is this oath, how do we do the oath and all? How does that work? So probably need this on the next agenda.
Yeah, and I don't know if Lori has the oath in her file.
I do not.
Okay. So we can include that in the agenda materials. I can get that document and email that over to Lori, and we can get that included in the agenda material. So at least she has that document if that's the way the board wants to go with it.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds right. Thank you, Pete.
Sure.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Public comments, anything? Let's see. No, don't see anything. Okay. Item 15, Lions Club rental and garbage.
I received a rental request and a variance request from Vicki Reinig with the Lions Club in order to do put together some Thanksgiving meals.
Gotcha. Okay. Let me unmute Vicki here.
Okay. She's unmuted.
Hello.
Hi there.
Vicki. Hi, Vicki. Hi. The meal would be basically what we did a couple months ago, just preparing the dishes and then distributing them to the individual homes, to the locations. So no one would be eating at the community building. Just for Thanksgiving, just for the one shot that we would be cooking a whole bunch of turkey, right in the refrigerator, and then getting them out to...
Vicki, my only request would be, what time are you guys starting during these days that you want to have the building? Because I'd like to keep it as far away from the employees as possible, not saying that anybody's got it or could carry it, but I'd like to reduce the exposure.
I understand. Well, we can work around your schedule. The first time would be just to bring the turkeys in and put them in the refrigerator so they defrost over the 3 or 4 days. And then following into the cooking of the turkeys, that would probably be just one person in there anyway, just to wash the turkeys to make sure they're done properly. The bigger job would be to in preparing the dishes and setting them up 2 days before Thanksgiving. So that could be in later in the afternoon, like a 3 o'clock on the 6th or so. And then the distribution would be, we would then pick up the turkey dishes that are already packed and ready to go. And we have a catering company that has a big catering truck that will take all the food and store it and distribute it to wherever the plans are. So that day before Thanksgiving Day would probably be earlier, and that would be probably like, not the day, excuse me, let me start over again. I think the day of distribution would be the Wednesday morning. So that would be an early time. Other than that, everything else could be later.
Okay, yeah, we could work something with that.
Vicki, how many meals are you going to be serving?
We're planning on 100, so you know, we're pretty well set for at least that. And we're going to do mostly a cold because of the situation. It'll be like a turkey sandwich and a side dish and maybe a dessert pie, one of those little pies that are already wrapped up. Everything is pretty well sealed, and we're all going to be wearing masks and gloves and all that good stuff. And then on Wednesday, after the food is distributed, our crew will go in and clean up the kitchen and with Lori's requirements. So,
hey, Vicki, why don't you give me a call tomorrow? I've got an idea for you.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll make a note about that.
Okay.
I would like to support this. I think this is a great idea, Vicki, and it sounds like it's along the lines of what you guys were doing with the creating the meals for the seniors for COVID relief. So you're not changing any of procedures as far as, you know, how you're going to, you know, handle coming in and out of the buildings and cooking and all that, right?
Right.
So it sounds like the same thing to me, so I'd like to support this.
I support this as well. Yep. And just so you know, we've been doing over 40 senior meals every day since May 18th.
Outstanding.
Offering for you.
Every day.
Good job.
Okay, can I have a motion to accept the variance for the Lions Club?
So moved.
Okay.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? All right, the motion carries, so the variance is granted.
Do we have to vote on the proposed rental too or not?
That is that part of the variance?
Yeah. I think it includes that. That is the variance, yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Okay. All right. Any public comments on that? No? Don't see any? Okay, item 16. AA proposed rental.
We've also been approached by Alcoholics Anonymous. They would like to hold a men's meeting Wednesday night at the community building. They outlined all their protocols in here. The ones that kind of stand out to me are they want to have up to 45 people in the building on a Wednesday night. And my concern with this as an employee is, yeah, they say they're going to clean, but I don't know how much they're going to clean. And I, you know, we've got some high-risk employees, so I'm on the fence about this one.
Doesn't the state have something as far as total number of people?
Yeah. You can do up to three households, if you know them, or up to, I believe it's 15 people now, can gather.
Lori, when they put on their maintain less than 45 members in the community center based on square footage provided, is that some type of calculation that they came up with for state rules or county rules?
I would say, I don't know of any county rules that that's mostly based upon the 25% of capacity. However, we're not at that in San Bernardino County yet. So, yeah, it is a calculation, but I don't think it's valid at this point. But
I don't see how you can fit 45 people in it and make that at 5%. That doesn't make any sense. I don't think we can grant this. I mean, everything. There's no county that is bad at all on their requirements this whole month. Maybe it's got the metric set up that it's never going to happen. You know, I mean, it's never going to be able to put someone to be in that building the way the current numbers are. I don't see it.
I mean, yeah, I don't see it.
I'd like to see it happen because I feel like, you know, mental health with addiction is really important right now. I feel like it's, you know, becoming a huge problem because of the lockdown. I mean, I'd like to be able to help in some way, but...
I totally agree. I completely agree. I just don't know how we both this together on this.
I mean, the men's group, for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, they've been meeting at the Grizzly, at spaghetti dinner, up to 12 people. And ever since COVID, that's what's missing. So that's why I think that's another avenue of trying to get some of the men together to have a little bit of a gathering. But I get it. It's just we're under these regulations, and it's just a tough situation.
I don't like those situations at all. I agree. They should be able to, they totally should, but the guidelines don't accommodate most of this stuff, and I think it's terrible.
Lori, what about, is there an option to reduce that headcount or just have, what's the minimum?
I asked them, in fact, Tammy spoke to the person in regards to this, and she did ask them to be at the meeting in case any questions come up, but I don't believe they're here. So I can take those questions back to them, but at this point, I don't know.
So what is the minimum that we can have as a gathering in our senior citizens, I mean, the community building?
I believe it's 15.
Is that what we do for a co-op?
Is way down.
I'd say well under 10. We don't, I mean, I'm just not playing around with it. We got people who are elderly, who have all sorts of health concerns. I don't want to see an outbreak in Redwood.
Okay. So,
Yeah, we don't get anywhere near the maximum.
What about the group that meets on the in the old firehouse? There's an AA. Is that?
Yes, it's the same group. It's the same group.
Okay.
And Lori, are they not meeting in the firehouse?
No, basically they're not meeting it because we've closed it.
Okay.
I think it's terrible. I agree with Natalie. It is just, why can't people meet to help with their addiction problem? It's just,
it's a big problem right now. It's getting worse for people, and I worry about people because that is a really well-attended AA meeting. There's a lot of people that go to that, and if they haven't had access to that in a while, I'm worried about those people.
If you're doing it on Zoom,
I don't disagree. I agree with Natalie and Wes. It should be something we do. But we're also fighting the government, or the governors.
They've got to get the numbers down to where it's those limits. Natalie said about mental health and groups, and I would love to see a meeting again somewhere, but it's got to be within the numbers that are being recommended right now. We are in a community. If we do end up with an outbreak in this community, we're going to be in a bad situation because we all go to the same places repeatedly. And so we need to practice wherever our personal beliefs lie, we need to support the effort that's being made throughout our school districts, throughout our county, to try to get ourselves off this list so we can get these restrictions lifted.
Lori, is the maximum 15 from the state?
Yes. So, with that, I'm just curious because I went to the Methodist Church to vote. Like, were they keeping under 15 people, like, at the Methodist Church for voting and things like that? Because I recall a lot of people there.
No.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking of that in the same, guidelines as our community building. It's a large building. Maybe people could space out. And
there's a lot of mixing going. I mean, there's protests. There's all kinds of stuff that don't fit in the guidelines, of course. But I think if the board is making a decision on I don't think we can go against the guidelines, however crazy and stupid they are.
Why don't we come to our, I think everybody's got their positions. Let's take a vote on this. Everybody knows how to feel about it, so.
I don't think we can allow it.
I really appreciate their attention to detail and all of the things that they listed for the precautions they would take, and I would really love to be able to approve it, but it has to be at a number that we're not going against what is coming down from above, essentially, right now.
So I think, Lori, maybe you should go back to see what kind of a realistic number based upon the size of our building. Could it be 15? It could be 20. It could be 25.
And or could they, host like two meetings back to back to, have the group there for the early meeting and half the later meeting just so that they have access to it if they really need it.
Okay. The only thing is, Leo, as far as I know, 15 is the max. So,
Dave, what do you think on this issue from a legal standpoint?
I agree with the comment I've been hearing from the board. Regardless of whether you like the regulations or not, that's kind of what you're under right now, and I wouldn't recommend that you violate those orders in those regulations. Your building.
All right. There's really nothing for us to do here, Lori. It's the answer is no.
Okay.
I think, Lori, though, I don't know if you had this conversation with them, it would be great to tell anybody that's got in COVID areas, but just to make sure they know that the likelihood of getting passed is slim to none unless they are complying with the things that you know, have been brought down from the state or the county and whatnot.
Right, right.
We've been telling them that.
Okay, great.
Jesus, I'm not even getting there. I'm not even sure how to have such Zoom. Where do you go? Right?
On Zoom, Wes.
I guarantee that 3/4 of California is going to violate the governor's rules on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Absolutely from the Soviet Union. So, item 17, we're not going to open the building. Right.
No, that's 16.
Or, no. Sorry, did. 17 is CSD building opening.
No.
The farmer's market.
Have I got the wrong agenda?
The agenda didn't get updated.
And so you got the one before, the one before I had to update on late Friday.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at it too. Is there... that there's agenda materials, did the agenda get modified?
One of them did. Is it posted in more places? I thought I saw one earlier that wasn't modified, Lori.
Oh, well, I thought I reposted the modified version Monday? Yeah.
Is it posted in more than one place?
No. I mean, it's physically posted in locations, but it's only online on the website.
Sorry, see it there.
Okay, so I see that there's two. Yeah. It is on one version that was emailed yesterday afternoon,
which is why I've been using it.
And it is on there on that for 17.
Okay.
I think the one that had the agenda materials included with it did not have it.
Okay, I got it. All right. So, I have said the farmer's market proposed rental discussion of possible action.
Yeah, Ron Frank is wanting to move part of the farmer's market into the community building. He's got his procedures here. He's going to have either 5 farmers or food vendors inside, and he wants to have the full 15 people total indoors.
That includes the vendors?
Yes.
And what happens when you don't have the masks on for some of the people? And
Well, I
know in Ron's thing, he talks about one of the grocery stores, the whole bit, but I also know you can't go into a grocery store unless you have a mask. Whether you agree with it or not, that's what's being done right now. And if he had, I've driven by on Fridays, and I've seen people in the farmer's market without masks, that type of thing. I personally don't have a problem with it, but we have regs. And who gets to not do the rest? I mean, Michelle, I've been by her place, and she is vicious as far as making sure following the rules.
She's not vicious. She's just strong.
Yeah. She's somebody you don't want to cross. So I'm just asking the board.
So we actually how to address it, because it's a tough issue to address with people,
yeah.
And it has not always been comfortable. We've had some very uncomfortable conversations. And I do not enjoy them, but I want to use the building. I don't want anybody having a legitimate complaint that would keep us from using it. So
I'm just bringing something up that I saw when I was looking at the market. Outside.
I think we have to say that he's going to, whatever his plan is, we're going to say that he's going to do his plan. So.
I thought he had mentioned somewhere in here, I can't find it, but I thought he mentioned that he would have like a greeter or something at the door and maybe that person can enforce the mask.
So it's okay for the farmer's market to have 15
people? Yeah, that's not, and I thought I said.
Well, okay, so the reason that the co-op only has 10 is that I submitted this proposal in March. Right, and this is when everything came down really hardcore and we were even more afraid than people are now. And and the requirement, the limit at that point was 10. And so my co-op, as John said, we're only using really, I mean, half the buildings up the baskets and half the buildings what we're using. We have no problem, even with half the building, maintaining that physical distance, but my limit is 10 because that's what it was, and we don't really have a need for it to be anymore. And if I did increase it, what it would be with these families coming in and having more clusters of people, and that's just hard to get people. So I did not know it went from 10 to 15. If it has, that's great, because that's more conducive to the market operating.
Yeah. But all I'm asking is, what do we do if we see that they're not compliant? That's all. What do we do? As a board.
That's really easy to talk to Ron and say you have to be compliant or else you're gonna lose the right to come indoors. That's really simple. Very easy.
Okay.
The biggest issue on the face mask is that it has to cover your nose and mouth. There's very little point in wearing it. It's not covering both your nose and mouth. And that is 90% of what I see in the restaurants, in the grocery store, everywhere, that's the issue that people are having.
Well, Ron also said that he would have the vendors with not only the masks, but face masks.
Right. Face shields as well, that's great.
Face shields, yeah, which is great. I'm just going on past experience with you. That's all.
So Wes? Yeah. What's the difference between the Farmers Market Co-op and the AA group if they were down to 15?
Well, I guess if they were down to 15 and that's the largest gathering that you're allowed to, I just don't know what the rules are.
If they were down to 15, it wouldn't be a problem for AA. The issue was 45.
So, Lori?
Yes?
So asking if 15 would be okay.
Okay.
Then the board would approve it, right, Lori?
Right, Wes. Yeah. I thought Lori said she was going to go back and talk to
us. Is that what it is now, 15? Or do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think you got to look it up, Chuck.
Okay, you
got to look it up. We can look it up. We can make sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Leo, if it's 15, I don't have a problem with AA using it.
Okay.
As long as they follow through with the cleanup.
Agreed, and that all is driven on the cleanup deposit. So if you have a large enough cleanup deposit, Lori, they'll ensure it'll get done. Make it $200 for the cleanup deposit.
Then you have to
make sure you inspect the next morning as well.
Okay, are we switching our security deposit now?
Well, if you think it's going to be a problem with the AA group, then yeah, you need to switch it up then. You'll have to bring that back to the board.
Oh, okay.
I think that's an okay thing to discuss during this COVID time because that is a bigger issue of whether we're cleaning up. You know, I mean, like we're using tablecloths all the way around and so we're not ever really touching the table. But making sure all those procedures are followed is a much bigger deal now than just having, you know, you and Tammy have to go in and do the work. Now there's also potential exposure, so.
Yeah, just make sure you get a big enough cleaning deposit.
Okay.
But how do we know if they clean? How do we know they did a thorough job? You know, and that's the question.
That's right, Tammy.
Yeah,
if they did clean, how do we know?
Well, I think that one of the primary things is the use of tablecloths, because
they're supposed to disinfect the table even if you use a tablecloth, according to the rules on the wall.
Yeah.
Everything is supposed to be disinfected, whether you're covering it or not. I mean, it's on the wall, on the door,
Yeah, you're right. There's no way to reinforce.
That's my concern is they say they're going to do all this cleaning and I'm just a little bit leery because nobody will be there to see it, so I'm not sure how. I mean, I see Michelle cleaning all the time, so to me that's a non-issue, but another group in I'm a little bit concerned about.
Then you see us because we're there during your, like, work hours.
Yeah.
Just to clarify for anybody else, it's because we're in the morning time.
So what did we decide on the farmer's market? Is that a go?
Well, we had said no before, but if the limit is truly, if the limit is 15, right, and then they can, and the guideline says that you can do, you can have up to 15 people in an indoor place of a certain size, wherever the guideline is, then that would be brought back to, we'll ask the AA if 15 is okay first. Secondly, somebody needs to do research and find out that that is actually in the guideline. And if it's in the guideline, then that would be brought back to the board.
Right.
Okay.
So I want to clarify one thing, though. When we said no to the farmer's market before, it wasn't quite that black and white. Ron did not have the notice that what he told us is he did not have the notice he needed and the knowledge that he needed to come in with a written plan. And so at that point, what we said was no until you bring us a plan, a written plan that shows how you're going to demonstrate how you're going to cover all these bases. And then in the meantime, before he did that, I believe he then made the decision to take the entire thing outside and just avoid the exposure inside altogether.
Right.
I don't, my memory is not that we as a board denied the market access to and fried. We just needed a more detailed plan. But given I haven't had a chance to read it because I didn't realize it was on the agenda until now. And so we started discussing it, but I have not had a chance to read it completely. But it's a much, it's a much more detailed plan than it was.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to read the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Lori, can you do the research on the guidelines, please?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And find out, is it 15, how much square footage do you need for 15 people? What is the guidelines?
Okay.
Okay.
And then that should probably be included in the agenda materials.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Okay.
So are we saying no to the farmer's market?
Well, no, what we're saying is you're going to do the research, you're going to say no for now, you're going to ask them, can they do 15? You need to do the
research. That's AA. That's AA. The farmer's market has said they will limit it to 15.
But we don't know the check.
You still need the research. You still need the research.
Okay, I will do the research. We can't
vote on this tonight because we don't know what the guidelines says exactly just yet.
Okay, so as soon as I get the information on the guidelines, do you want to set up a special meeting?
We could, yeah, we could.
Okay.
Good. We can have just this thing on the special meeting.
Well, the dates he's asking for are the first two Fridays in December, I believe. I think that Ron is on this call, by the way. I think he has the phone that has no name attached to it left. I don't know that he's raised his hand or anything, and he's on a phone, and he's tried to get on the computer and could not. He texted me and said that. He may not know how to raise his hand on the phone.
Okay, let me
But he's showing up as the last number listed on our...
I see it. Let me try to unmute it here. It's not unmuting.
Ron, you may have to unmute yourself, too, once Wes...
I don't know how that works exactly. I don't know what someone's going to make anyway, really. It's just, we can easily hold a Skype meeting if that's what we need to. It's just a Zoom call. We need the research on the guideline.
And the two Fridays in December is December 4th. We'll have a board meeting on the 1st.
Yeah.
Yes, but I got to say, the way that his market is set up, he's going to need to let his farmers know before Tuesday. They're going to
Is anybody against the special meeting?
No.
Okay.
All right, awesome.
Let's get the research done and we'll do it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to support right now and I can't find it fast enough.
Okay. No problem. Let's just get the guideline. That's it. So farmers market AA, that's all related to that. CSE building opening in general, the answer is we might change our mind based on the research that is going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So, but for now, it's still closed. Okay, item 19, is, so we're going to have a closed session. Conference with, so I'd like to move to a closed session here. I'm going to turn the recording off.
Is Cecilia here?
No.
Let's see, who are we doing this year? Negotiator, Lori, negotiating parties, Jerry Cummings, under negotiation price in terms of Robert's agreement. So, Cecilia is not here, but she's supposed to be here for the negotiation of that.
She cannot come into closed session.
Oh, okay. She cannot come into closed session anymore. Yeah, okay. So, I want to take it to closed session. I need to get not here again. Bye, that guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so, how do I do this? Hang on, I guess for me, let me figure this out.
Unless you can do a breakout room.
Don't know how to do that. Let's see. Don't know how to do it. Let's see. Give me 1 second here. Don't know how to do a breakout room. Well, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna kill this meeting for a second, okay? I'm gonna restart it, and just all the board members come back in, and I'll deny everybody else out, okay?
But can they just wait, and then if they're still waiting when we finish, you can let them in at that point? Is that possible?
Absolutely.
If somebody wants to see at the end of our meeting, they can just hang out. Okay.
Yeah.
But I need to kill this meeting for now.
Okay, but I need to make sure that members of the public can, they will know to join for killing the meeting. Does that mean killing the meeting? Because how would the members of the public know when we come out and that we're announcing?
Because they'll try to join, they'll just be in the waiting room.
Okay.
And then as soon as we're done, we'll all just unlock everybody in the waiting room.
Okay.
And so, Wes, you can unlock people one at a time regardless of the order that they request to be unlocked. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So as soon as you kill this meeting, we can all request to be let back in. Okay. And you're just going to let the 5 board members and Steven and then everybody else will be in the waiting room until...
That's right.
Okay.
One more. Okay.
You got to add me back in, too.
Oh, all right.
I'll do that. Okay?
Okay.
Everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going offline here for a second. We're recording? All right. And, Steve, don't we have to say that we took some action on this?
With respect to the closed session item, the book, I gave instructions to the general manager regarding that matter, no reportable action was taken.
All right. Thank you. Okay, future board meetings, December 1st, and that's right before the 4th, so let's go. So, great, and any public comments? No? And we got future board meetings, director's comments. Any director's comments?
Yeah, Lori, for the agenda of the next meeting, December 1st, I'd like to have savings account policy.
I couldn't hear you, Chuck.
Savings account policy.
Okay.
For the board to discuss the vote on.
Okay.
All right.
You know, Chuck, if you weren't sitting on a mountaintop, we might hear you better.
Yeah. Well, I can go down to Field and Pinion Hills if you want me to.
See that better.
I wanted to thank Lori for her work with Edie and Payne and just acknowledge again the community building looks great from the outside. Appreciate your attention to taking care of that.
Agree.
Thank you.
All right. Any other public comments or anything?
Do we have something else that was supposed to be on the agenda next month?
We have several things.
There's a couple things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you got notes on those, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, great.
Well, thank you, everyone. And a long meeting. I really appreciate it.
9 o'clock.
Everybody have a happy Thanksgiving.